Welcome to the Organizational Transformation Kung Fu Podcast with your hosts, Sandy Varecchia and Jennifer Long.
So welcome to this episode of Organizational Transformation Kung Fu, or OT Kung Fu, as Jen and I like to call it. I'm here, of course, with executive coach Jen Long in Denver, Colorado at Management Possible. And I'm Sandy Varecchia, an executive coach and strategist coming to you from Toronto, Canada at Satori Consulting. If this is your first time listening in, welcome. And we wanted to let you know that we've dubbed our podcast OT Kung Fu because the art of Kung Fu requires patience and energy and time to complete. Much like organizational change or transformation, it takes time to master a skill and takes the patience and a change framework to get us there. Obviously, as executive coaches, this is a part of the playing field in which you play. So, Jen, how are you?
I'm good, Sandy. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. So happy to be here today.
Happy to be here today. This is exciting. I am excited for our podcast today because we are going to be talking to Ben Harris. He is the president of an organization called Production Solutions. And if you're a nonprofit organization, you really need to know about his company because they are fantastic. And you're going to learn about them as we converse with him. I've been working with his folks for about a year now, and I wanted to bring Ben on because he is in a unique position to share his story in that Production Solutions is primarily a remote workforce and has been far longer than we've all been struggling with how to do this during the pandemic. So I've asked him on here to share his leadership story and to share some insights on how to lead remotely because he's doing a fantastic job. So with that, I'm going to introduce Ben. I'm going to give you a little bit of his background. He is over 20 years at Production Solutions. Ben has established a reputation of high character and excellence and relentlessness in his improvements as he consistently emphasizes the importance of development and commitment to Production Solutions, peoples, and processes. Ben steadily displays his belief in his staff through authentic communication, positive personal interactions, and investing in everybody's success. He also focuses on the execution of superior customer service with each client through every interaction. And they're really good at the service. I've been coaching his folks, just let me tell you. Ultimately, Ben's commitment to the growth of internal staff and excellent customer service helps to lead and empower Production Solutions' sustained success and brand in the marketplace. And as a thought leader within the nonprofit marketing world, Ben regularly shares his insights and unique point of view as a speaker at conferences and industry events in order to empower and encourage the nonprofit ecosystem to continuously disrupt themselves, grow, and ultimately thrive in these changing and uncertain times. Ben comes to us from Alexandria, Virginia, where he lives with his wife, Brooke, and his three children, Sadie, Adrian, and Tyler. And he enjoys exercise, having fun at parties, and going to the beach. And I'll just say, he started us off on this podcast with a fantastic meditation.
Yes, very,
hi,
very
Ben. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Welcome,
hello.
Ben.
Hi, Sandy. Hi, Jen. I'm really excited to be here and really honored. So thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Well, I'm so looking forward to sharing some insights about how you do what you do. And I know Sandy's got some of the first questions she wants to put on the table here.
Yeah. I'm going to start off by saying I looked at your website and it's great, by the way. And I love your vision to inspire more people to give. It's just a terrific vision for your organization. So could you give us a little bit more about what Production Solutions is and how it came about?
Sure. We're coming up on 30 years being in business. And we really sit at the center of the process where nonprofit organizations need to generate more awareness, more donors, more revenue or gifts for their mission. And there is an execution component to getting direct mail campaigns out into the marketplace to donors, potential donors, current donors. And we are really the execution component to that. So we don't really do the strategy or the creative or the copywriting. We work with creative agencies, or many clients will do that in-house. But we will then take sort of the blueprints, if you will, and actually contract with manufacturers across the country and deliver, you know, fully established campaigns for all of the donor interaction that nonprofits need to continue to fulfill their mission day in and day out. So in a simple sense, Sandy, we're a broker. Some people will say we're a middle person. And so really we sell service. We don't own any equipment. We don't own any factories, facilities. We are a part of a larger ecosystem, which is called More. And we do have sister companies and partners that do some of the other aspects of direct response fundraising. But really, at its essence, it's about really being as good as our last job. So we have to prove ourselves many times over and over and over again. So it's service over anything else, which is why we emphasize so much of the people work and culture work that we do.
Excellent. All right. Well, how many staff do you have, and what percentage of your workforce is working remotely today?
So we're close to 120 employees today. And we really started to migrate and lean into the remote working sort of culture and approach in the 2015 timeframe. Before then, I think going all the way back to 2010, we had one or two employees who our offices are in Northern Virginia on the East Coast. We had an account manager who wanted to move to Colorado, and she said, "I love the company. I'd love to stay with the company. Do you think I could pilot the remote working?" And it was a really interesting conversations internally to sort of allow her to do that. But she was a trailblazer. Her name was Michelle. She was great. And she was sort of the proof of concept in terms of us seeing 10 years ago what could be done. But it really didn't start to take hold until the 2015-16 timeframe, where it was really, and you all talked about this in one of your episodes, I think it was episode 13, the war for talent. It was really difficult for us, we're not too far outside of Washington, D.C., to find the talent and the people that we needed to keep the organization moving forward. So we started to sort of expand our reach, if you will, and find a lot of people in different parts of the country who had the skills and the desire to do what we needed them to do. And we started to move steadily down that path. And what we started to find was that we were bringing really great people in, and they knew really great people. And it started to just really be this sort of virtuous cycle of our talent pipeline filling up without us really having to do a whole lot, and really bringing some great people to the table, which forced us then to really look at how are we going to grow the organization and blend what was really a full-time in-office culture and operational system with what I would call sort of a full-time or steadily growing full-time remote culture and operation system. I have some stats here. In 2019, about 70% of our 100 plus employees were what I would call full-time. So working, you know, we're in Virginia, they're in Vermont. We bring them back to the office maybe four or five times a year for some, you know, some weekly kind of all hands meetings and things like that. And then the 30% was in, was in the office, but we're also doing some part-time remote. So for example, in 2019, I was in the office consistently 3 days out of the 5 day work week, but then home working remotely 2 days. And that was a shift that we made when we downsized our office space a couple of years ago, when we realized this remote sort of movement was happening. We needed to re-up our lease, and we went from about 20,000 square feet to 8,000 square feet. We forced the issue, because the last thing we wanted to do was spend any money for any space that was just sitting empty or idle And that was a really smart move that our CFO, Wayne, challenged us to make. He said, guys, we can always go get more space. What I don't want to do is see us getting a 6-year lease and we have all this, you know, space that no one's using. So it's been a progression. Some of it's been forced. And now obviously with the pandemic, we've been 100%, you know, full-time remote. We're working in 24 different states across the country. We have employees in 24 different states. And we've even toyed with the idea of, do we even need an office when, you know, our lease is up in a couple of years.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're 5 years ahead of the COVID curve, as we could call it. And so many businesses are now wrestling with that is really, do we need the office space? Right. And I certainly am with mine. My employees are remote. I don't think we need an office anymore.
The landlords are bumming out completely.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, so you talked a little bit about proof of concept, right? So Michelle was the proof of concept going out. And I think a lot of people are in that place of proof of concept. What were the struggles? What was the hesitation? What was the thing that tripped it for you that you said, okay, yeah, that's a good thing? Or what were the things you were holding back? Like, I'm not sure. And how'd you get through that?
Yeah. And I think it's important for the audience to know we're talking about knowledge workers. Yeah. You know, we think there's a big difference in many of the other, many of my other colleagues I've talked to or, you know, where obviously if you're a manufacturer or you're, you know, in retail, it makes this remote working dynamic almost impossible. I think the thinking about that question, Jen, you know, it kind of ties into the way we've approached culture and even concepts like moving our managers from managers to coaching leaders, right? Changing the lexicon, changing the philosophy, and then, you know, almost setting kind of a North Star on, we want to move from managing people to being coaching leaders who are coaching other leaders. And it's the same thing with, I think moving from an in-office knowledge working culture and system to a remote. Most of our biases and our thinking is around these norms that have been built up over what management and managing productivity is supposed to be or look like. And as you two know, I know from being coaches, most of us who get into management really don't get into it because we go to school to be managers and we're really trained and studied and practiced like people who are good with martial arts are. It's like, hey, you're good at this. How about you manage people? Right. And then you just, if you're not self-aware and you don't, you know, you're not humble and hungry to continue to add the skills in and get the feedback and tweak the recipe that I think leading and getting the most out of others takes, it's a daily discipline and practice. Like it's an art. And I don't think it's never anything that's finished. Mm-hmm. So I think the same thing with moving to a remote system and looking at productivity and all that, you have to make the commitment that this is the way it's going to be for the rest of our lives, the rest of our careers. If you want to be successful in business in the knowledge workspace, I think if you don't have an affinity or a curiosity around remote working, like you're starting to fall behind the curve because the pandemic has shown a light on what's really great about remote working. And then there's a lot of, I think, second level consequences that are starting to reveal themselves that we're going to have to inventory and then strategize and figure out as it becomes, you know, isolation. And, you know, some of the things that are kind of the negative sides of having everyone not see each other physically every day. Right. So I think it's a commitment and it's thinking about this talk today, I think it has to be a core strategic priority that everything needs to be looked at through that filter. How will this change support our ability to be highly effective for clients, for staff, and for our partners while working remote? Like it's got to be almost become a value system that it's not going to change it once, set it and forget it. You're going to have to constantly be tweaking it and working at it and measuring it and talking about it.
Yeah. Right. you know, here I work with a number of clients that are really struggling with a lot of things that you talked about, and it, because it wasn't a priority because they were thrust into it with the whole COVID and things like that, and they're really struggling with that notion of how do we know whether they're actually working. And so what advice do you have, other than kind of making it a priority and kind of looking at things through that lens and ensuring that kind of you're managing that side of things? What else can they do? Other than an example of a client that actually is measuring the amount of time that they move their mouses all day. Is it a mice? Mouse? And that sort of, which is really bringing down people, because like, well, I'm not always moving my mouse, right? Yeah. Working really hard, but I can't be seen. So what advice do you have for organizations, well, certainly here in Canada, that can't see them, but, you know, can't measure them?
Well, I think that goes to some of the fundamental flaws in using, you know, 30-year-old management philosophies or thinking in, you know, 2020 and beyond. What I would offer that serves us extremely well in any change management initiative, and we really started to institutionalize this 4 or 5 years ago as we were changing a lot of things in the company. It wasn't just around remote working. It's called the wheel of change. And there's a lot of different sort of, you can Google it and find it, but there's three real sort of buckets in the wheel of change. It's a really simple change management model. The first area is hearts and minds. Another way of saying hearts and minds is with them. What's in it for me, right? So putting yourselves in the employee's shoes and going, you know, as we go to make this change, what's in it for them? How do we present the change and really create a lot of dialogue to get people to talk about concerns, desires, aspirations, fears, doubts, all that? Like, you got to get a lot of dialogue going. And if I'm a company who is struggling with this, are they productive or not? As a leader, I need to say, Sandy and Jen, I am struggling with knowing how you're being productive every day. That's really hard for me. It's keeping me up at night. I'm worried about that. Can we talk about that? Mm-hmm. Like, help me work through that. What ideas do you have to bring me to a more stable place of knowing you all and trusting that you all are doing what you need to do? So that's the first bucket. The second bucket is behaviors. So then you start to look at, once you spend the time in the hearts and minds, you go to the behaviors, and then it's structures is the third bucket. We find that if you put 80% of your time in the hearts and minds phase of the wheel of change, the behaviors and the structures almost take care of themselves, because everyone's involved then in the whole process. They're invested, right?
Invested, yep.
So it takes, I think, a humble, open, self-aware leader to say, these are my concerns. This is what I'm worried about. I don't know how to get a handle on this. Help me with that. You might get some people across the table or across the video screen going, oh my God, who is this person? If you haven't led that way before,
right.
But it's that emotional intelligence and some of those things that are really essential today that, you know, and I would say, like, people are professionals, unless they're just not good professionals. And I don't think there's a lot of them out there. They want to do great work. They want to show you what they're capable and can do.
Right.
So I think it's also having that intentionality and that sort of positive intent to believe that Sandy and Jen are going to do great work for us.
Yeah.
I think so many leaders
about outcomes and expectations too.
Right. So many leaders want to be able to tell people, this is how it's going to go, and kind of set these expectations. And the buy-in, which is the hearts and minds, right? The buy-in is the conversation that says, here's what I'm struggling with. What are you struggling with? How do we get through this? And that's alignment. That is the alignment conversation that says, are you in, right? And that's how you know, right? And so that's great. I love that.
Yeah, the whole notion of assuming positive intent. And I think the other thing that strikes me when we talk about this, and sorry to cut you off there, is that whole idea of that isolation and mental health that is probably going to be a byproduct of what's coming down the pipe. These intentional conversations are going to be even more important in the months and years to come.
Yeah, And I think there's, I would also offer that if you are an executive or a director and you're trying to figure out how do you keep the company moving in a profitable or productive direction, I think it's important to sort of reorient yourself or kind of restate what is your ultimate purpose in your role now and possibly into the future. And I think a big part of what has helped us in some of these decisions is that early on in the process, it just pained me to know that some of our employees were driving to and from the office. We live in a very busy, congested area. And, you know, sometimes 90 minutes, 120 mm-hmm. minutes in the car.
Yeah.
And they have families and they have, you know, significant others. They want to be healthy, exercise, you know, take advantage of the weather. And I just, to me, that was just like an inhumane thing to have to require people to do and not think twice about. It's like, oh, well, it's just, it is what it is. Like, that's just part, if you want to work for us, where we shifted to it's sort of the overarching, everyone deserves a job that serves their life. So if you start to orient from something like that, like a North Star like that as a leader, and you truly believe that, you can change people's lives fundamentally, which then can change their community's life. It can change their friends and family's life. Like, it's a ripple effect, and businesses can do that. Then it takes like that whole productivity kind of nitpicky part of it, and it takes it to a whole nother, like, much bigger level. And I think when you start to look at it through lenses like that, it gets you to take a step back and go, okay, what am I really trying to accomplish here? As opposed to productivity. It's like, how do you serve them? Because when you serve people better than you serve your clients or just as good, they give you back tenfold discretionary effort, heart and soul. And that's what really makes the business go and grow, is when they know that you have their back, you know. And, right. You know, when we hit a tough time with this pandemic, our culture kicked in. And the performance of the people in our company this year has been so inspiring in ways that I never imagined. And it's because of some of the things that we did prior to this.
Awesome. So I want to go, so we kind of zoomed out there. I want to zoom in to when you've got to put people in these leadership positions, because leading leading remote people, I think, is an interesting challenge, because and Sandy and I did an interview with another friend of ours, Trina, who does a whole thing on virtual teaming. And so there's this notion around holding space for the people in the team. And I think there's a significant challenge when you don't see each other and you don't have the energy of the room, and what that frequency is. And so I guess that's a big preamble to kind of asking you about, how are you gearing up your managers to lead well and to manage well, and how are you doing it? What's your approach to be effective when people don't see you and get your energy? I know you guys do a lot of camera work and whatnot, but there's also a lot of email, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's I think the important approach to take if you are managing or leading others is to begin to immerse yourself in studies and best practices that currently exist or are starting to emerge. You can go online and find anything from MIT, Harvard Business Review, McKinsey are a couple that I would recommend, where I know Zoom had put on a session yesterday that I saw just about how to inspire and motivate and lead others in a remote world. So I think you have to be a student of what's happening in business so that you can start to glean from other businesses what is working, what's not working, and then you can start to look for those same types of patterns or trends within your business. So that will help you sort of identify at a broader level kind of what's happening, you know, as you talk to others. I think the other part of it is, we talked earlier, is you have to talk to people. You know, how are you feeling? You know, how's your energy? Are you able to keep your energy up? you know, you can tell pretty quickly if someone's not feeling good, even just in their tone of voice, their inflection. So I think it's making time to check in, probably, you know, being more intentional about that. And then starting to look at what is working, why is it working, and where do we need to go in the next 3 to 5 years to make sure that we're delivering a world-class employee experience. So I think on your, in your upskilling podcast, you talked about, you know, upskilling and what you need to do. And I saw something in an article a week or two ago where it said upskilling is table stakes. Like, you have to be doing upskilling, you know, in order to just, you know, be at the kind of the survival level. It's more about future skilling. And it's about future skilling, you know, your managers, yourself, and making sure you're prioritizing things like resilience, whether it's mindfulness, whether it's self-care. Like, those are things you have to start to talk about. You know, you have to also, I think, model that, you know, and I do this at times in our all hands where I say, I'm really struggling this week. You know, I had this happen. I'm having a down week. You need to be okay letting people know that you're human and it's okay for them to be human. So I think it's bringing some of that into it as well. And then starting to, just like you, if you're going to make the shift from being in the office to remote, what was working well in the office, putting that in a chart or a grid, why was it working well? And how do we replicate that in a remote environment? And being pragmatic about, okay, this is easy to transition over here, but this is like a real physical process or system. How are we going to make that effective in the virtual world? Same thing, I think, needs to happen with how managers are keeping people inspired, being able to read body language, read clues that you can pick up in meetings. And then, you know, look for clues and patterns from other businesses that are always there, I think, and starting to, you know, I think Tony Robbins has a great quote that says success leaves clues. So don't go out there and try to figure it all out on your own. I mean, you can find anything that you need to find today just by doing a quick Google search, and you're going to get a plethora of videos or articles or webinars of like, okay, well, let's try that one.
Right.
And then implement something that you learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like the whole pragmatic approach, because I think that's going to hit home, certainly with a lot of our listeners that I would call it old school versus new school way of leading people. And so doing that, you know, what's worked and how do we transform it over is a good approach. But I'm curious how or what advice you would have for leaders that would struggle with that whole mindfulness piece of it. It's like, if they haven't led like that.
Right. That's exactly where my head went.
Yeah. To stand up one day and all of a sudden be a mindful leader without feeling like a imposter.
Yeah, that is a really great question, Sandy. And I think what I think is important, and this could be a pragmatic or way to approach it, is you could either do you could do a survey. We do a lot of surveys in the company. And I wrote something down here. It's kind of like a 5R approach. I think it's 5 R's. Let me see here. Where you survey, and surveys, I know for a lot of businesses have a negative connotation, a lot of employees, negative experience. You survey, you review, you report, you respond, and you repeat. So it's 4 R's. Review, report, respond, repeat. If you're going to ask your staff, how can I be a better leader? How can we bring more balance into the workplace so that you have more time for self-care? Or how can we make you feel more trusted at home when you're like, whatever good questions you want to come up with, open-ended questions. Or you can do a rating on a scale of 1 to 5. How would you rate the company? And then you could open do the survey. Within a week or so, review the data with whoever needs to review it, respond in the, you know, hold a meeting, tell people what you heard, tell people what you were interested in and what was really you were excited about. There's got to be some positive things in there. Here's what we heard that we're going to work right away, immediately, to start to make change around. And there's going to be some things that's going to take us some time to think about, like everyone needs a brand new computer with six new screens at home and, et cetera, et cetera. We hear you. We're going to need to work on that. In the meantime, here's what we're going to do, right? So that's part of that hearts and minds work. So, you need to spend time asking people what it is they need, what's going to help them be their best. How can you be a better leader? How can the company be a better steward of their success? And then you need to make sure you actually do something with what they say. And that's a quick way to rebuild and get the trust wheel going. And once you get that trust wheel going, it does amazing things for all aspects of the business. Because feedback starts to flow both ways, as opposed to top down or out. And all the talent in the company, the treasure, the ideas, what you need to know is was inside the business. So, the better you get that internal part of the business going, the easier it's going to be for you to deal with a lot of those uncertainties or external forces that you really don't have any control over. So that's one thing that has really served us well. We're going to we use the Gallup Q12 employee engagement survey every year to measure employee engagement. That gives us a lot of rich data in terms of what's working, what's not. And then we started to use a new tool called Tiny Pulse. And Tiny Pulse allows us to ask a question every week just to take kind of a leading indicator on what's going on in the business, to try to identify potential problems or issues. Another good tool like that's called Culture Amp. But if you don't have something like that where you're measuring what people are feeling, you're kind of trying, you're sort of managing with blinders on, or managing in the dark, is what you're trying to do.
Right, yeah. For sure. And it feels like, it's a lot of trust, transparency, and as usual from a leadership, a lot of communication. Do you guys have a standard around when you're if you're managing and leading, how you meet, right? So a lot of people I know are, because they're new in the whole thing, they're figuring out Zoom, but a lot of people get on the Zoom and nobody turns a camera on. So I don't know, is there a baseline where you're like, here's the deal, because you got to see people or not? I mean, if you got recommendations those are kind of just tactical, but I think that kind of helps people understand that.
They are tactical, but I think it's a great question, Jen, because the little things are often what makes a big difference. So as we made the intentional shift to go from 20,000 square feet to 8,000, we knew we were going to have to do office sharing, where directors were going to have to rotate offices with each other. We had a lot of open concept seating and some sort of teleworking benches, if you will. And what we did before we made that physical move is we started to actually work as if we were in 8,000 square feet, and we started to share offices a year before we made the move, right? To get all of the kinks out of the system, right?
Kind
of like bringing a fish home in the bag and letting it sit in the water for a little while before you put it in there. So what I had to do as the president was I had to also work from home 2 days a week, even though I wasn't too far from the office. I had been making the commute for a long time. It wasn't that big of a deal. But I knew in order for this whole shift to work, myself included, I actually needed to work from home 2 days a week also, or 3 days a week, or whatever I determined. Those were set days unless I was traveling. And we all set our schedules so that we knew who was coming in on which days, who wasn't. We all started to model what we expected on screen, at first you have to, I think, let people kind of go loose a little bit with what works, but then you need to start to say, hey, it's really important to me in meeting A, B, and C that I get to see you all. Mm-hmm. If I'm this CFO or I'm the president or I'm directing a team, I want to see you all. And if somebody is having a hard time on screen, I think you have to take that offline and say, hey, Jen, I notice you're not coming on video. Is there something, you know, I'd really like the team to see you. I'd like to see you. How do we get you to show up like everyone else on video? So we can see you. So I think you do need to model first. You need to get curious about why people aren't doing certain things. You need to eventually put standards and best practices in place. I tell our team when I work with them, if we're doing some sort of deep work or some strategy work, turn your self-view off, right? So make sure your self-view is hidden, because when our eyes see our face, we can't take our eyes off our face. It's just amazing.
We like
thing,
to watch
right?
ourselves work. Yeah.
Just our brain sees a face in it, you know, so yeah. Things like that. If we're doing some deep thinking, I'll say to people, it's okay if you turn your video off. When we have all hands meetings and we have 100 people on screen, I don't need everybody on video, right? Because I just want people watching me or the other speaker. Just really want them to listen, maybe take notes. So, you know, and those are things that I've learned by reading what makes sense from a neuroscience perspective with video and screens and all of that. And so I think there are some of those simple things you do have to pay attention to, because then they start to layer. And so when you get to something complex, it makes that easier to address.
Right. And it feels like, and that in and of itself, and a lot of what you're actually putting out there is the mindfulness part of it, because you have to think about what you're doing. You don't just walk in the conference room anymore. You don't just command the space because you show up and everybody starts paying attention, right? There's this mindfulness around how do I want to do this, right? How does this need to feel for people? And that is the, I think the piece that people get frustrated. They just want to take what they know, turn on a camera and go. And they're not really thinking through, right? Who do I see? Who do I not see? Because I think the judgment is, if I don't see you, you're not actually paying attention.
Yeah. And I think it's that whole walk the talk piece. Mm. You know, I was doing a session actually a little while ago where the leader of the team is about 26 people, wouldn't put his camera on. And I said to him offline on chat, I was like, they need to see you so that they're as present as you are. And I know you're present, but, and he wouldn't do it. And so it's that walking that talk and kind of setting those expectations. And if you're willing to do it, then others will follow. So that whole modeling is critically important, I think.
Very much so.
Yeah. And I would say too, I think on the mindfulness or putting you know heart into your work, if you don't recognize today after 10 years of people like Simon Sinek and Brené Brown and Seth Godin and everyone else, I mean any of the TED Talks that you'll go listen to about, you know, embodied leadership, where we bring our whole selves to everything we do, right? So if you're still trying to hold back your heart mm-hmm. and your compassion and your empathy and your care, and you're trying to keep this like a 1950s, you know, factory workers, manager's mentality, like good luck. Mm-hmm. Right. I think, what did Tony say? Tony said something really, he said, good on you, I think is what, you know, he said a couple of times, like, you are good on you, you know? so it's not easy. And at the same time, it's one of the notions of, I know deep down that human beings want to connect with other good human beings. Like it's a community, whether you're a part of a church, a bowling team, you love a sports team, you're part of a big family, whatever, like somewhere in your life, there's community. And whatever that feeling is, bring that to business. Because business is where people spend, I don't know what the stat is, you know, now that we're all working remote and we have smartphones, probably 95% of our days, right?
Right, this is getting worse.
So how about the, you know, getting on with this movement, this conscious leadership movement about allowing people to do great work from wherever they are in a way that, you know, I think has certain parameters, but not so, you know, don't focus solely on the productivity part of it. And if you're not sure how to be a mindful leader or a conscious leader, get a coach, go to a seminar, mm-hmm. get a mentor. I mean, get active, because the movement and the wave is happening. And I think the pandemic has shed a light on that in many, many ways.
So many ways. And it's a great learning. It's fantastic that so many companies have been able to experiment with this because they had to. And what everyone is learning that you already know, it's been very fascinating to watch the progression of people, and even some companies who have some portion of their workforce who've been remote for a long time, I think are learning to up their game. Because mm-hmm. it's really kind of become the essential. Any other questions you had, Sandy? Houston's such a great job running through. I was looking through my notes, and I'm like, oh, he's hit on that. He's hit on that. He's
like, he read them before. I just had a quick question, I guess, in terms of, so you went down from 20,000 square feet to 8,000 square feet, and you forced people into a remote situation that they may or may not have been ready for. So how did you coach people that had a difficult transition, and did everybody stay?
I think for the most part, and I think we had the sort of the luxury of being in a very, very busy area, outside of Washington, D.C. So that's like the third worst, commuting area in the country, I think. I think there were a lot of people who, in addition to starting to hire people in different, states and regions, that just started to see their colleagues get on with working from home one day a week or 2 days a week. So there was a little bit of like a positive peer pressure or peer movement. There were a couple people that, really were worried about how this was going to impact their ability to focus, their ability to separate work from home. Mm-hmm. And we just had to work with them. I don't think we lost anybody, Sandy, that, was like, I just can't do this anymore, because I think, thank goodness for smartphones and sort of the mobile technology, on sort of the silver lining side, is I think people just recognize that the movement was afoot, in terms of being, very flexible when it came to getting work done from wherever you were. I struggled with it. It was really hard for me. So I think, a lot of the things we're talking about today, I don't want people listening to think like, whoa, you have it all together. It's good on you type of thing. As Tony would say, I think, there's still days where it's really hard for me to be at home, with our three children. Now they're doing virtual school. And I'm able to sort of close the door and isolate, but you can still hear them, and you come out to get a cup of coffee, you have to walk into the kitchen. It's not like I could go down the hall and talk to a colleague. So there's days where I'm like, oh my God, I don't think I can keep doing this. Which some of it is pandemic, but it's also difficult. Let's go back to 2019, where the routine for me of going into the office 5 days a week was something I knew for 17 years, right? You go to work, you drive, you get the commute time, you can make calls, listen to a show, whatever. And then you leave and you come home and you have time to assimilate and get yourself into, home mode. So going from Monday, I'm at home, Tuesday, I'm in the office, Wednesday, I'm at home. And I think Thursday and Friday back in the office, like the shift in routine, and having to take my laptop and bring it with me and bring it back, like that took me a good 2 years just to get used to, like, how do I focus in very different environments? Because that drive and that sort of like, almost like putting on your, your superhero cape, like you go into superhero mode or work mode, like you don't have that anymore when you walk from your kitchen upstairs or downstairs. Like you gotta, there needs to be a lot of intentionality and work through that. And you have to be, self-compassionate and gentle and express to others, like, this has not been easy for me. I'm struggling with it, and make it a community thing. So, it's not perfect. I think it's important that you need to start somewhere with the notion that The acceleration was already happening around heartfelt leadership, mindful leadership, remote working, having businesses serve the lives of the people that work there. Like, that movement was happening a long time before the pandemic. So this pandemic has actually been a gift in a lot of ways to say, hey, now's your time to not waste the struggles and the challenges and the insights you've gotten from this really hard time. How are you going to come out of this and make sure that you take what was really good from this experience and grow exponentially and keep your business and your culture going in the right direction?
Right.
Because it's not going to bounce back. We're bouncing forward, and it's a matter of how far forward we're going to bounce, right? Or how far we're going to land.
Right.
So, you know, it's a practice, it's a discipline, it's an art. Like you said in the beginning, you know, with the martial arts, it takes time, patience, and energy. So that's what I would say.
All right. That's excellent. You made me think of one last thing, and this is impacting women everywhere, and you have a lot of women in your workforce, in your company, dealing with the kids at home. How are you leading through that? I've got so, you know, trying to get the work done and knowing that they are logging kids on and off, and they are doing the job of teachers and doing the job of everything.
Yeah, it's really, really challenging. And it goes, you know, we've done a lot of surveys asking, you know, not just at the manager level, people, managers checking in with their team members, but also surveying the staff to ask, you know, what are your biggest concerns right now? What are your challenges? So we can get regular information about what we might be able to just tweak and adjust. We know from the Gallup survey that we did in July that we have what I would call kind of a meeting issue, too many meetings. We had that issue coming into the pandemic. So to see that now, our senior vice president of operations, Drew Wilson, came to me in light of that feedback and said, you know, we're having this all hands meeting in a couple of weeks to report out on our Q3, you know, KPIs. But we also have this other kind of operations meeting. What if we combine the two? Because that way, you know, we're not having people have 120 minutes. We can get it done in maybe 50 minutes, you know, things like that, where we are looking at the data, trying to make little adjustments where we can, and then also going one-to-one to each individual employee and saying, you know, what's going on for you? What do you need? We did plan to hire additional people to help with what we expected to be a capacity crunch or bottleneck, because people were going to need more flexibility. And just being ready to be flexible and open. And even just sort of, I think, having grace around the fact that on a good day, I'll get maybe one or two knocks on my door from the kids knocking to ask me a silly question. Even though I say, if the door is closed, please don't come in, and I'm on screen and I don't, you know, it happens, and they go, oh, you're talking to Drew. Hey, Drew, how are you? Same thing. You know, I need to model that with the, you know, employees on the other screen. If they have someone pop in and, you know, it flusters them and they get triggered, like, I just, you know, need to sort of laugh with them about it. So I think there's also that kind of, again, humanness around understanding that this too will pass. We will get through this at some point. In a year from now, 2 years from now, what are people really going to want to, what do I want people to remember about the way I showed up and led them and supported them and their families during this time? Right.
Yeah.
And again, having more of that be the guiding North Star of what the decision is I need to make in the moment, or the company needs to do, versus why can't they get a handle on, you know, their home life? Why can't they figure out what to do with their kids? Or, you know, don't they know that's having an impact on the business? Like, meanwhile, the people are the business. So how do you, without, I think, being too far reaching, support everyone in a way they need it so that they can hold the business together?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And that's I'm also reading a lot of the articles and studies that are coming out about, you know, what this is going to do for female workers. You know, there's plenty of articles and studies coming out about this could set or looks to be setting, female workers back who have, children like by a whole decade or so. Yeah. Compared to their male counterparts or women who don't have children. So I think being in tune with that and watching for, is that happening in our business? What conversations do we need to have at the executive level around those topics? Because if you're seeing it and it's coming up in your feed or your sort of purview, you got to expect that the other people in the company are too. So right. I always like to try to bring those topics to the table at the same time someone else does, or even before they do, and say, hey, we're seeing this. Is this happening in the business? And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. And then you have to figure out what to do from there.
Excellent. This has been really a great conversation. Very informative.
Mm-hmm. Lots of tactical things, I think, that our listeners can take away, as well as that whole notion of mindfulness, I think is an amazing proposition for people to try on and do more of.
Exactly. Ben, I want to thank you for spending the time today. This has really been an excellent conversation and listening to you talk about how you do this. Not only was there mindfulness at the beginning, an excellent choice. I'm even calmer about the future of leading in a remote place. So thanks for that.
Thank you so much, Ben. It's a pleasure meeting you and chatting with you today.
Absolutely. Keep up the great work. And I really enjoy the show. So I'm honored to be here.
Fantastic. And if you want to find Ben's company, you can find him at Production Solutions, productionsolutions.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you. Be well. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening, and please visit Sandy's website at satoriconsultinginc.ca. That's SATORI consultinginc.ca, and Jen's website at managementpossible.com. Thanks again.